Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Graham McGregor, and on behalf of my partners at the Harbor Group, Chris Newell, Peter Coward, and John Grant, I'd like to welcome you to our 2016 start-off conference call. I'm very pleased to have in the room with me today Robin Gullison, our lead strategist. Robin's going to cover off several items for us today, which we believe are very timely. Can I pass the call over, please, to Robin?
Great. Thanks, Graham. Thank you, everybody, for calling in today. I'm going to go over our first quarter strategy for 2015, and after, Graham's going to go through some of the most common questions we're getting from our clients during the volatile markets we've seen here over the past couple of months. So I wanted to focus on a few different things today. The number one overriding theme we see in the global economy and the market today is that the U.S. economy comes into 15, continuing to lead the developed world in growth. And when we look at Canada, despite all the differences between the economies, Canada tends to do well when the U.S. does well. Now, of course, we've seen a lot of volatility in the energy market, and the way we look at that for the U.S. is that it's quite positive. Our economists have run through the numbers, and looking at direct capital expenditures, employment, et cetera, for the U.S., it's very small. Of course, there could be some fallout from that to suppliers and such, but really, when you look at the boost that the consumer is getting, it's about a little over $100 billion on an annualized basis, and that adds up to a pretty substantial amount of GDP, about 0.5%. So we think that the drop in oil prices, as painful as it is here in Canada, is actually quite bullish for a large swath of the United States, of which 70% of their economy, of course, is tied to the consumer. So one of our main tenets in investing is, you know, bull markets don't necessarily die of old age or even really due to excessive valuations. It's more about, do you get a recession, do you get tight money, and a recession that tends to cause bull markets. And again, if we look where we are today, well, do we have tight money? Hard to argue that we do. You've got global central banks starting to print more money, starting with the ECB, who just started last week. The Bank of Japan continues to run quantitative easing programs. We've had unexpected rate cuts from the Bank of Canada, among others. And now you have the Federal Reserve, who is talking about perhaps starting to raise interest rates at a very slow pace later on this year. So to us, that doesn't really smell anything like an inverted yield curve when you get short-term rates higher than long-term rates, and that's usually what leads to a recession. So in our view, the recession probability for the next year to 18 months seems pretty low, and that should lead to continued returns for the equity market. In Canada, again, the move in oil has been pretty volatile. It's probably going to lead to more of a rebalancing of the Canadian economy. It's hard to say on net if it'll be a big negative or not. I mean, it's definitely negative for Western Canada, but if you think of the majority of the population lives in Ontario and Quebec, and it's very positive for that part of the country, also very positive for the manufacturing sector. Typically, when you get a big move in the currency, you start to see a change in manufacturing behavior 2 to 3 years later. And we're at the point now where the Canadian dollar has been weak for 2 years, and you should start to see a reaction in manufacturing fairly soon. Now, maybe it starts out with the U.S. companies decide not to close their Canadian plants, and if it stays here for a bit longer, they start to return to Canada. But we think it's definitely a positive for this part of the country, because even the companies that have stuck it out and stayed in the manufacturing sector here will continue to start seeing their growth pick up pretty substantially as the currency becomes much more of a tailwind compared to the headwind that it's been. And we look at the TSX and how it's put together, it's becoming a little more reasonable of an index. So we've put out a number of publications over the years saying that the TSX is a very unbalanced benchmark. It's not really an appropriate benchmark for risk-averse investors in Canada, because you had a market that used to be about half commodities. That's a mix of the energy and materials sector. And given what's happened in the past couple of years, the market's now 30% commodities. So it's better than it's been, but it's still quite high when you compare it to the U.S., which is about 10% commodity. So the TSX is becoming a bit more balanced, but we don't think it negates the need to diversify internationally, because even though you've got a smaller commodity sector, you still don't have a healthcare sector to speak of, you still don't have a technology sector to speak of, and not a lot of consumer stocks in Canada. So we think, despite the move in the Canadian dollar, it still makes sense to diversify into the U.S. market to rebalance the portfolio into those sectors that we don't have a lot of here in Canada. When we look at the equity market valuations in Canada and the U.S., we still think we're pretty fairly valued, not necessarily cheap, not overvalued, but fairly valued. And if you look back to the prior cycle, you had PE ratios in the range of kind of 14 to 16 times earnings. Right now, you're at about 16 times earnings. So you're at the same range you were last cycle. But I think there's a big difference this time, particularly in the U.S., in that you have higher quality growth. So you used to have, in the 2002 to 2007 era, U.S. driven by housing, right? So you had people using their houses as an ATM. You had all sorts of funny business going on in the bond market to support this. And that was really the big driver of growth in the U.S. You had higher interest rates than you had now, and you have higher inflation. If you look at things today, you've got much higher quality growth. You've got a U.S. dollar that's strengthening instead of weakening. You've got very low inflation, and you have central banks that are still very supportive. Yet you've got a market multiple that's basically the same as it was during the last cycle. So I think the valuations now are probably more reasonable than even they were last cycle because the composition of growth is a little bit more positive. And we're starting to get to a part of the cycle now where we should start to see good growth out of the U.S. economy. Most economists are looking for that. It's been elusive so far, but growth in the 3% range in the U.S. And we think that's something that's much more achievable this year than it's been the last because you are going to get this boost from the consumer. And meanwhile, the government is much less of a headwind than it used to be. If you think back to 2011, 2012, you had the sequester. I'm sure everybody remembers that, the debt ceiling fights. You had a lot of restraint from the government. Government spending took away from growth. Well, now it's a lot more neutral, if not contributing a lot to growth. So we think you're finally going to see some better growth in the U.S., and we're hoping that drags Canada along with it to some extent. Now, while we think the market's fairly valued, we do think it's going to be a little more volatile than it has been. So if you look back to 2013 or early 2014, you had very calm markets. You had calm interest rate markets. You had calm currency markets. And the equity market, for the most part, was a pretty smooth ride higher. If you look at the way things are today, and this kind of started in the fall, we're probably going to have more volatility going forward. And one of the main reasons for that is you have central bank policy diverging for the first time in many, many years. So while you've got the Europeans and the Japanese printing money, Canada cutting interest rates, you've got the U.S. starting to finally look at tightening their monetary policy. And that's a big change because before everybody was going in the same direction, and now you've got the world's largest economy kind of zigging while everybody else is zagging. And that has a lot of implications in the foreign exchange market where we've seen a lot of volatility. If you look at what's happened to the euro, the Canadian dollar, and the U.S. dollar in general, it's been very, very strong. It also has implications in the interest rate market. I think one of the big misconceptions last year, everybody talks about how, you know, the 30-year treasury was one of the best performing assets on earth last year, and it's true. It had very strong returns, but very, very few individual investors own bonds that are longer than 10 years. It's mostly pensions and insurance companies. If you look at what happened to short-term yields, 2-year yields and 5-year yields, they were basically flat. So I think the story is getting a bit distorted about what's been happening in the bond market because it's been kind of two bond markets, the long-term bond market and the short-term bond market. This year we've seen yields decline across the curve a little bit, but last year you really saw flat short-term rates and medium-term rates because the market was starting to price in the eventual Fed rate hikes you're going to get likely later this year. So while we have this divergence in interest rates, it's led the currency market to be more volatile, and that's feeding through to the equity market because if you think about it, a lot of money out there has been invested for over 6 years now on the premise of zero short-term interest rates. And a lot of money out there is leveraged, so they'll borrow at zero or something close to zero and buy a positive yielding asset and lever it multiple times to get an acceptable return. Well, now if you change the math a little bit and say, okay, my zero rate becomes 0.25 or 0.5% financing rate, well, that really changes the return prospects for any kind of leverage investment. So we think as you get closer to the interest rate hikes, you typically see some volatility in the market. We don't think it's going to be any different this time around. The big determinant is, do you continue to see growth in the economy after rates start going higher? If you do, then you tend to be all right. If it leads to a recession, that's a problem. But again, we don't really see a recession on the horizon. We fully expect it to be a more volatile year because of what's going on with the central banks, the fact that the U.S. is going to hike rates for the first time in a long time. And that's why our view for total return this year is if we can capture the dividend in the 2 to 3% range, plus earnings growth in that mid-single digits, call it 5 to 7%, and that could equate to a total return in that around the 7 or 8% range. And if you get multiple expansion, that's great. So if the PE goes from 16 times to 17 times, that'd be great, but that's not going to be our base case forecast. A lot of people use it as their base case that the multiple is going to go higher, and the history has actually been that in the U.S. market, as the U.S. dollar strengthens, the PE goes higher. So hopefully that'll be a bit of a tailwind, but that's not really our base case forecast. So when we turn to the bond market for a minute, you know, it's very challenging to get historical returns that we've seen out of interest rates where they are now, with the 10-year Canada rate at around 1.4, 1.5%, 10-year Treasury at about 1.7. The long-term history is the yield that you buy your bond at today is the overwhelming determinant of your return over time. So even if you buy a 10-year bond today and then you roll it into a new 10-year bond next year, et cetera, the yield you initially bought at is the overwhelming determinant of your return. So based on that, we don't think that medium-term bonds are going to return much more than 2% a year over the next 5 to 10 years. You might get a big year here or there, but you might get a big year up or a big year down. But over that medium term, it's hard to see the compounded return being substantially higher than the coupon is right now. And, of course, if interest rates start to trend upward, that would put a little bit of pressure on that return. So the way we look at it, we still think there's better total return prospects in equities. Government bonds are more about preservation of capital than really generating a strong total return. And we have seen some volatility in the high-yield bond market, so we're starting to look at opportunities there, but we're kind of taking our time because there's been a big change in that market with what's gone in energy. The energy market is about 15% of the high-yield bond market, so that has caused a bit of volatility there. But it's kind of starting to paint all other issues with the same brush, so we're starting to take a look at high-yield again, though not in a big way, just starting to investigate it. So, again, we think government bonds are always going to be in people's portfolios because you need it there for protection of capital and for a hedge against any kind of deep volatility you might see in the equity market. But we think we're going to have better total returns out of other parts of the bond market like high yield or alternative fixed income and into the equity market.
Thanks very much, Robin. We appreciate those insights. Perhaps I could ask a few questions that were being posed of us by our clients. Let's talk about a little about the Canadian dollar, and it's a fairly meaningful move it's had against the U.S. dollar. Perhaps you could talk a little bit about how other currencies are trading relative to the U.S. dollar and how they've fared in the past several months, just to give us some context. Are we alone here in Canada and seeing our currency depreciate versus the U.S. dollar? And perhaps you could also let us know some indicators that you watch on an ongoing basis to give you a sense of direction of where you think the Canadian dollar is headed. On a short-term and perhaps on a longer-term basis?
Sure, that's a great question. It's something we're obviously getting a lot from many of our clients. And you know, the Canadian dollar has been influenced by a number of factors over the last 6 months. Over the long-term, the Canadian dollar has always had a very strong correlation with energy prices. That's, I don't think it is a really big surprise to anybody. But that correlation has become very, very strong over the past few months as oil has taken this trip down from $100 to $45 a barrel. So that's been a big influence on the Canadian dollar. And it's been compounded by what's happened with the Bank of Canada. So the Bank of Canada unexpectedly cut interest rates from 1% to 0.75% last week. And the Canadian dollar also lines up really well with where the difference in interest rates is between Canada and the U.S. It's not necessarily the absolute level, but it's the direction. So if Canadian short-term rates are falling faster than U.S. short-term rates, the Canadian dollar tends to depreciate. And that's really what we've seen. So we already had a weak dollar with the petroleum prices going lower. And after the Bank of Canada cut interest rates and basically said, you know, we might do it again, that kind of poured gasoline on the fire and pushed the Canadian dollar to quite a low level. So the Canadian dollar has been oversold in technical terms for quite a while now. And if you get any hint that the Federal Reserve is going to push interest rate hikes out to next year, to 2016, like some people are starting to call for, that's not the consensus yet, but some people are saying that. If you see that sort of talk pick up, then maybe the Canadian dollar can gain a bit of ground, but I think the overwhelming determinant for now is going to be what's happening with the oil price, because it seems to be trading with a near one-to-one correlation with oil.
Thank you, Rob. Just for our listeners as well, many of you know who have participated on previous calls and who have been longtime clients of ours can appreciate our focus on dividends and dividend growth. It's a theme that we really continue to embrace. And Robin, perhaps you could just elaborate as to what your outlook is for this specific strategy in the balance of this year and next.
Sure. So we kind of think dividend and dividend growth is an all-weather strategy. You know, it may underperform if you get a market like the late 1990s where there's a big fad in technology or a commodity boom or something like that. But over the long term, we look at dividends as a company's assurance to its investors that it has a strong business and that it's going to be around and be able to create long-term profitability. So we view a dividend as a very strong signal of quality of management, quality of a business. And we think the prospects for dividend stocks this year are quite good because interest rates are so low. So if you can capture a dividend, which is, of course, tax advantaged, in the 3 to 4% range, compared to a 10-year Canada bond at a little over 1%, we think people are going to find dividend-paying stocks quite attractive for the foreseeable future until you get a big material rise in interest rates that doesn't seem to be on the horizon anytime soon. And dividend growth, we think, is kind of the best way to fight higher interest rates, because a company that grows a dividend tends to have a bit of a lower yield because people are paying up for that growth in cash flow over time. And if you do get higher interest rates, that higher dividend should help to offset any change in the interest rate environment. Whereas if you have a company that has a static dividend and it doesn't change over the long term, higher interest rates will be much harder on a security like that than something that's able to grow its dividend and kind of keep its yield in line with where higher interest rates might go.
Thank you, Robin. On behalf of my partners at the Harbor Group, I'd like to thank you all for joining us today. As always, we welcome any commentary, feedback that you may have, and please feel free at any time to reach out to us via telephone or email, and we'd be pleased to follow up. I will also say that Robin is very pleased to meet with you on a one-on-one basis, should you desire to do so, or is pleased also to participate in conference calls. Thank you so much, and let's have a great year. Bye-bye.